welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. As a reminder, during our second hour for the next at least 4 days, we're going to turn our attention to Shavua, away from the creation account and to the celebration of seven sevens, because it will begin at sundown on Thursday, the 16th of May, later this week. In the news, a Tunisian, who authorities believe radicalized one of the suspects held in Canada on charges of plotting to blow up a passenger train, has been arrested in New York City. It is amazing that we have gone to groupthink so quickly again. There was a period of time where, when speaking of Islamic terrorists, we simply used the term terrorist. And then there were so many of them, and they were so similar to, in fact, identical to, the very population in Iraq and Iran that or Iraq and Afghanistan that we were telling everyone that we were in there to those countries to liberate, that we called them insurgents, as if there were a separate group of people. There were the good guys that were trying to liberate, and then there were these insurgent types. And then the country, starting with the George Bush, the King George II, then moving to an extreme with Obama, wanted to relabel those who they were at war against as extremists. Because if it's extremist, then you can separate it from Islam, and then you can also apply it to anyone who is opposed to what you're trying to accomplish. And therefore, it became extremist. This is the whole uproar that has taken place recently over Benghazi, where it has been shown conclusively through their internal emails that the State Department purposefully, deliberately, on 12 different times over a course of a matter of one day, deliberately changed the information that was known about what happened in Benghazi to blame a attack that had been perpetrated by a fundamentalist Islamic group called Ansar Sharia, which means Friends of Sharia Law, on a spontaneous uproar over a Christian movie regarding Muhammad. Because if the movie could be blamed, then extremists were the foe. If Friends of Sharia are to blame, then Islam is the foe. And so the president and his State Department deliberately, knowingly lied, and we have absolute proof that this is the case. Well, radicalized is one of those terms. Radicalized has become kiss and cousin to extremist. You know, are they a self-grown extremist, or were they radicalized by foreign influences? Well, I guess it's only a foreign influence if you consider Islam foreign. If you consider Islam part of the fabric of America, as does this president, then you've got to come up with another explanation. But anyway, the universal use of radicalized shows the groupthink that has become so pervasive in America, so destructive to our ability to think. But this time it is a Tunisian. He was, his name is Ahmad Abbasi. He was arrested when he tried to reapply for his work visa. By the way, these work visas are handed out as our education visas, like candy, where we bring in the disease that is killing us, and they don't work. In the case, look at the case of the Charnarev family. They received over $100,000 in welfare. We are paying them to hate and kill us. As alleged, Ahmad Abbasi had an evil purpose. This is according to Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. He had an evil purpose. He was a Muslim. Of course, he had an evil purpose for seeking to remain in the United States to commit acts of terror and to develop networks of terrorists here. Networks of terror. We can't blame it on Islam, so we're going to blame it on networks of terror to use this country as a base to support the efforts of terrorists internationally. Much of the discovery in the case originated from the recordings between Abbasi and an undercover agent who spoke Arabic. Once again, we're back into the same situation. Stings. And when you're using a sting each time to say, look how successful we have been at preventing a terrible Islamic tragedy, what you're dealing with is a very fine line as to whether or not the U.S. government is actually engaged in illegal activity. Of course, in this case, the translation of those conversations remains classified. What doesn't the government want Americans to know? That 100% of those discussions, where the motivation was discussed for committing acts of terrorism, was Islam? No, we don't want America to know that, because then they would know that our war on terror is a complete fraud. But they would know that we aren't at war against Al-Qaeda, and Al-Qaeda is not at war with us, that they're irrelevant. That's what Americans would come to know. In the court documents, prosecutors alleged that Abbasi radicalized another Muslim named Chaib Ezhayer, who allegedly traveled overseas for training and plotted to engage in terrorist activity in the West. Them traveling overseas is just such a fixation. It's like we're not going to even bother to understand that you simply have to open the Quran, read the Hadith, and all the training, all the motivation, all the justification you need to commit acts of terror is right before your eyes. One does not need to go to overseas. Moreover, the kind of bombs that are being deployed to murder and maim are presented on Islamic websites. One does not need to go overseas to learn how to make them. This overseas concept of, oh boy, we've got to really keep up our guard and keep up our war against terror overseas for the radicalization and training camps, it's just a bunch of rubbish. Anyway, the radicalized Muslim was arrested in Canada. Remember the big plot that the Canadian Royal Mounted Police said that was inspired and financed and controlled by Al-Qaeda in Iran? Well, it turns out I'm laughing, of course, because Al-Qaeda and Iran are foes. They're not allies. Al-Qaeda is Sunni, and Iran, of course, is in a civil war right now in Syria, battling Sunnis because they are Shia. But it turns out that the inspiration for Mr. I want to blow up the train bomber came from Tunisia. I know it's a complicated world, and maps are tough, you know, and you got to be able to read, and you got to be able to turn the globe so that you can see there's another part of the world other than North America, dear Royal Mounted Police, but Tunisia is a very long way from Iran. Of course, when you look at Tunisia, that was the first country to fall in what has been misnamed the Arab Spring. It's really an Islamic Reformation. And there, the most fundamentalist Islamic party prevailed, just as the most fundamentalist groups of Muslims prevailed in Libya and then again in Egypt, just as they are prevailing now in Syria. During the meeting, the junior I want to blow up the train bomber and Abbasi allegedly said that their discussed desire to engage in terrorist acts against the United States and other countries were outstanding and that they would receive international funding. The organization that he said would be engaged in funding them. No, not Al-Qaeda in Iraq, as the Royal Mounted Police said in Canada. No, it was the Nusra Front. Now, what is the Nusra Front? The Nusra Front is a group that, even before their name was known, was sharing on this program what caused the Syrian, what was a, at the time, peaceful protest against the Assad government, what caused that to become the bloodiest civil war the world has known in some time. What caused it, what made that transition, was the awakening councils that the United States had armed and funded in Iraq, and they fled Iraq, where they're having marginal success and reuniting a civil war there, these Sunnis, in opposition to the Shias, and they began using their weapons in Syria. And so what we find is that there is a direct correlation between the Nusra Front and Al-Qaeda, not Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State of Iraq. Now, this, and the reason I stumbled over Al-Qaeda there is this article says that the Al-Nusra Front is an organization commonly referred to as Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Well, that's not true. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq prior to the American invasion of that country. They were bitter foes. But the Islamic State of Iraq, which is the name of the predominant Sunni Islamic terrorist organization within Iraq, and the Nusra Front are identical. They're one and the same. They, same leader, same motivations, same group of people. It just was a movement of American armed jihadists and Sunni jihadists in Iraq across the border into Syria, where they began a civil war that there is no way to stop, that has become the worst, most hellish, combined presentation of everything that is wrong with Islam in the world today. And it was all started because America armed the wrong people. Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You can join this conversation anytime over the next 2 hours by calling 877-300-7645. The terrorist act, by the way, that all the Muslims were all a-Twitter about wanting to fund and to perpetrate, that was such a marvelous and good plan, was contaminating the air and water supply with bacteria in order to kill 100,000 people. Turning to another act, this one singular, this one in a different part of the world. The article comes to us from Reuters. It begins with a name, Ali Zaghal. Read the mysterious text message on early on a Tuesday morning with dread. It read, "Forgive me, brother." Minutes later, his 21-year-old brother, Salam, it is sad to read this. This is how misguided Muslims are. Anyway, his 21-year-old brother, Salam, stabbed an Israeli settler while waiting at a traffic circle in the occupied West Bank, killing him before being shot and arrested by soldiers. So here's Ali Zaghal reading a message from his 21-year-old brother, Salam, who said, "Forgive me, brother." And he went off and killed an Israeli whom he did not know, just decided that up close and personal, he would drive a knife into his heart. While the family of the dead settler mourned their loss, the Zaghal family, living in poverty in the north of the Palestine territory, defended Salam's actions as justified. So, here's a murderer. He is living in a mythical land. He is impoverished because of his religion. And because of his religion, his family said, perfectly appropriate for him to go kill an Israeli. Their quote is, it was destiny, and we take pride in him as a family. You know, it was like the immediate aftermath of the Boston bombings. The Islamic world were all rejoicing because from their perspective, it was good. Killing in Islam is a high calling. It was destiny. We take pride in him, this murderer, as a family. What he did is a duty. For all of the mythical people known as Palestinians, of course, the mythical people was omitted from the article, end of quote. Living with the aggression of the army and settlers. Oh, rubbish. The settlers are peaceful. The aggressors are the Muslims. His elderly father, Assad, said. Well, is there any wonder why Yahweh wrote, etched in stone, that the corruptions of the fathers will be counted upon their children to the third and fourth generation? This father is responsible for making the monster that became his son. We witness the same thing, of course, with the Shinarev boys and how hideously repulsive both their mother and father was, is, are. The slaying of the 31-year-old Borowski, the Israeli, was the first time an Israeli had been killed by the mythical people known as the Palestinians. By the way, him being a Palestinian, this mythical designation had nothing to do with the desire to kill, nor the justification for it. It was all that he was a Muslim. In the West Bank since 2011, about a year and a half ago, when seven Israelis were murdered, including a family of two settlers and their three young children, who were all savagely knifed to death. Nine Palestinians, the article says, have been shot and killed by Israeli soldiers this year alone. To which they add, mostly during clashes with protesters. Every Muslim who has been killed there has been killed for attacking Jews. It was in the process of attacking. Israelis don't care. If you want to have a parade where you honor your murderers, that's just fine. Go ahead. Be stupid. But when you start throwing rocks, when you start throwing Molotov cocktails, when you start firing guns, when you start flinging knives, they're going to stop you. Well, Salam's deed may bring esteem to his family. Murder brings esteem to a family among some Palestinians. It may not ease the old taint of his rundown village. His brother, Abdul Fattah's conviction by the Palestinian authorities for spying for Israel. You see, Salam's deed, his desire to kill, was to assuage the great stain on his family by his brother's action, where his brother, probably falsely, was accused for spying. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yana. We're discussing the story of how a religion perverts people's ability to be moral to the point that they view killing as the highest honor. Here's a situation where even reporting on killers is considered the greatest stain on one's character. So the Israeli security forces say that they are investigating whether Shalom's attack on the innocent Israeli settler was meant to clear the family name. So you can, in the world of Islam, it is so upside down, you actually clear a family name by committing murder. Palestinian society, again using this term, as in, a Palestinian society. Come on. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. There's no such place as Palestine. How can you have Palestinian society when the Muslims that live in and around Israel are amongst the most impoverished, least educated, most savage people in the world. And yet, there's a Palestinian society, the reporter wants us to believe, reviles suspected spies, and families seldom live down the shame of being linked to one. Now, we're not talking about spies. Israel has the most formidable spy network in the world, and they use Israelis. They're not like the United States. The United States doesn't have the CIA does not embed Americans in foreign groups that would do us harm. We tend to want to bribe people to provide data for us and spy on their own, to turn traitor on their own people. That's not what the Israelis do. The killing appears to encapsulate the contradictions of Palestinian politics. Now, here's Palestinian politics again, when there is no such thing as a Palestinian in the West Bank. By the way, there really is no such thing as the West Bank either. You know, when this area was part of Jordan, it was never called the West Bank. It was called Jordan. And now that it is part of Israel, it's now occupied territory, and it's the West Bank of the Jordan River. It's Judea. Anyway, it's encapsulate the contradictions, torn between working with a sworn enemy and lashing out violently against it. Yes, there's this notion that Fatah, the old PLO, is trying to work with Israel as opposed to lash out against it, while Hamas simply wants to lash out against it. And by the concept of a sworn enemy, the Israelites, the Israelis, don't have this mythical people known as the Palestinians as a sworn enemy. This is always one way. The Muslims attack, the Israelis simply defend against whoever is attacking them. Abdul Fattah's 10-year sentence was commuted out of mercy for the impoverished family. All of these folks are impoverished. Islam makes them that way, a security source said. And he was freed on bail pending an appeal after serving a year in jail. Now, this is the one that was allegedly engaged in spying. He said, "I served a year. They said I was informing, but they were totally wrong, and they had absolutely no evidence." Abdul Fattah said, holding Islamic prayer beads in his sinewy arm. Shalom was released from an Israeli jail just 2 months ago after completing a three and a half year term for planting explosives by Israel's separation barrier near his village and trying to wrest a gun from a soldier. So the murderer was in jail for planting a bomb. And he was released from jail from planting the bomb. And so the most noble and wonderful religious act that he could perform was go killing a Jew. This quote, they let him out of prison, out of one prison into what? This open-air prison? In other words, the so-called Palestinian territories are a prison. He had no job and was talking more and more about the martyrdom of the prisoners in Israeli jail. He felt deeply about their suffering. Now, here he was in jail for planting a bomb. That's why he was in jail. But yet he felt deeply for the other Muslim morons that were in jail for similar crimes. And it was his view, upside down as religion causes it to be, that the murderers, and one of the murderers who were in jail, were the martyrs. They were the victims, not those they were trying to kill and were killing. And then, rather than talking about the suffering that these Islamic terrorists had perpetrated on innocent people, oh no, it was the murderers who were suffering. Israeli settlers care little about the attackers' motives in killing their brother, who was the father of five. They have demanded more settlement building on the land the Palestinians want for a future state. There are no Palestinians, and we ought not reward terror. This Muslim murdered the father of five. Why reward the murderers who justify the murder, who take pride in the murder, with their own terrorist state? This is a quote from the housing minister of Israel at the Borsky's funeral. The people of Israel must continue to redeem all parts of the land of Israel, and indeed they should. These murderous Muslims have no place in God's home. On Wednesday, settlers erected a new makeshift settlement on the hilltop where Borovsky was killed, murdered. Settlers from his hometown, known among the Palestinians for their militancy. Now, here's militants saying that the Israelis are militant. And why are the Israeli militants? Because they are building homes. That's the militancy of the Israelis. Well, the Palestinians, who saw the Israelis as militants for building homes, set fires to the fields surrounding the new homes and then threw stones at the Israelis. Moving on to another story. This is a recap of the sad state of affairs in Iraq. You know, when America invaded Iraq, I studied the 10-year history of Iraq prior to America's invasion, and I found that on average there were two terrorist attacks in Iraq a year prior to America's invasion. And on average, these terrorist attacks caused the deaths of one or two people. So we were dealing with approximately 3 to 4 Iraqis dying in a terrorist attack each year prior to America's invasion. Now here's the history after the invasion. April was Iraq's bloodiest month in almost 5 years. 712 people were killed in bomb attacks. Bomb attacks very much like the one that we witnessed in Boston, according to the United Nations Iraq Mission. Iraq has grown more volatile as the civil war in neighboring Syria strains fragile relations between Sunni and Shiite Muslims. Tensions are at their highest since U.S. troops pulled out in 2011. Yes, the Sunni-Shia civil war in Iraq is at its highest level since the pullout. However, it is grotesquely higher than it was before the invasion. The number of attacks increased sharply after security forces raided a Sunni protest camp. And we're not talking about security forces. We're talking about the Iraqi military using American attack helicopters, tanks, and artillery attacked a peaceful protest. And that, of course, spread to other areas of the country as the victims, the Sunnis, defended themselves. The month of April was the deadliest since 2008. A total of 712 people were killed. Another 1,633 were seriously wounded, all in acts of terrorism across the country of Iraq, the UN statement read. The number of civilians killed last month was 434, while the toll of security personnel was 278. It's one of the hallmarks of Islam. When they commit acts of terrorism, they are focused predominantly on women and children. There's an interesting story, changing religions here, in the Vatican, but it's something that we talked about on this program, that Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger, who is now Pope Emeritus, had to resign because of the stain of two things. One is the blackmail that is swirling around issues of running a homosexual brothel in the Vatican, and second, absolute proof that he himself aided and abetted priests who engaged in pedophilia against Roman Catholic children. The case in Los Angeles proved it conclusively. So he needed to stop being a lightning rod, and he also needed the protection that the Vatican's political status gives. You see, the religion of Roman Catholicism wants to pretend as if it is its own country. In that way, its leaders are immune from prosecution. So what we are seeing is exactly what I predicted, that the Pope Emeritus, Cardinal Ratzinger, is now moving back into the Vatican, because on the Vatican grounds, then he has immunity from prosecution. So after a two-month stay at the summer papal residence in Castel Gandolfo, south of Rome, Benedict is going to return to Vatican City by helicopter. Pope Francis will meet him there. The unusual arrangement has raised eyebrows at some Vatican watchers concerned that the president of a former pontiff might somehow influence Francis, whether consciously or not. Now, aren't these guys also supposed to get their influence directly from God? Well, Benedict tried to assuage the concerns. He's there because he doesn't want to be questioned. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There's a report now that the Navy is inaugurating its first squadron of drones, of unmanned aircraft, formally adopting the drone technology amid its debate over its growing use in war. Military officials will launch the Submarine Strike Quad Squadron. They're calling the drones that are deployed from submarines. Now, I got news for you. The U.S. military, particularly the Navy, is doing everything they can to try to justify the unjustifiable. They're trying to justify the use of aircraft carriers. They're trying to justify the use of submarines. Neither have any value whatsoever. And the purpose of a aircraft carrier is to project a force. And if we did not have the ability to project a force, if America's military capability was nothing more than defending our own borders, we would be vastly safer than we are by projecting a force and therefore being prone to engage in conflicts we ought not be part of. But the submarines, I mean, they literally have no function. And so the first thing that the military officials are trying to do is justify their desire to continue to build submarines. So their first squadron of drones are going to be called magicians as they fly out of submarines. The squadron is going to have 8 manned helicopters, unmanned, oh yeah, eight, it says, manned helicopters, and a still-to-develop number of Fire Scout unmanned helicopters that can fly 12 continuous hours tracking targets. The Navy drones will be operated by contractors overseen by military personnel. In other words, it's much easier, cheaper to train a pilot in the private sector than it is in the military. And so the operators will be private pilots. No, I was just thinking and talking with Scott over the break. And this use of drones, it's president must wake up in the morning, wring his hands and say, who are we going to murder today? You know, just every day needs to start off with a good killing. And so I looked at the number of days that he has been in office and the number of people he has ordered the murder of through his drones. The average is 3 a day. If you look at his 4.5 years in office and the number of people, that he is ordered to be killed and who have actually been killed at the hands of these drones. It's about three a day. The Eurozone, the next story on the review board says, is going to shrink by a great deal more than was previously expected, with France sliding into a horrible recession, according to a gloomy European Commission report. You know, these kinds of economic forecasts from central bankers are all designed to tell you, oh, yeah, well, we've turned the corner. Everything is going to be great. You should believe in us. You should just go on as if nothing is happening behind the curtain. Not to worry. And yet, as they get closer to reality and it becomes more difficult to deceive, they announce the truth that economic conditions are far worse than what they had previously said. They said that overall, France entering a recession is going to contract. They use the term negative growth. You're either growing or you're dying. Negative growth. Quote, grappling with the aftermath of a profound financial and economic crisis, the EU's economy is now set to pick up speed. Only very slowly in the course of this year, the report said. Of course, one of the things they did not say is that in having been a pilot, I can tell you that the fastest way to pick up speed is to point the nose of the airplane down. So, yes, the European economy is going to pick up speed. It is picking up speed, just as the American economy is, as we race to our own destruction. Pointing the nose straight down. It predicted that France's deficit would rise sharply to over 4% of GDP in 2014. Now, the American deficit is averaging twice that, at 9% of GDP. So here's France, way outside of what the European Union considers reasonable, adding to their aggregate debt at the rate of over 4%, when the United States is adding to it at the rate of 9%, $1.4 trillion against $1.5 trillion, or $15 trillion in overall revenue.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs believes virtually all disease states can be backtracked to digestive problems.
Deficiencies in stomach acid can affect all down.